This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, joined by my colleagues Ryan Brobst, Deputy Director of the Center on Military and Political Power at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, and Bradley Bowman, Senior Director of SAME. Because these gentlemen who produced for me in April a document that was very helpful to understand where we are in war fighting in 2025, Arsenal of Democracy, now focus on the immediate needs of one theater. This is Ukraine. You will note in the news there was the thought several weeks ago that the U.S. was going to halt shipment of missiles and weapon systems to Ukraine because the U.S. deployment needed those missiles and weapon systems for its own readiness. However, we're told by word of mouth out of White House that there was a very good call between the president of the United States and the president of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky. And after that, there was an apparent reversal of the order to withhold for our deployment needs and to ship to Ukraine. What? What are we shipping? Air defense is the general category, but there's more to it than that. So I welcome Ryan and Bradley to help fill in the numbers. Brad, I start with you. The reversal of the order also used the modifier defensive weapons. What does that describe? Is that meaningful, or is that rhetoric for the political voices? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. It's great to join you with my great colleague, Ryan. You know, as someone who worked in the Senate and saw my fair share of political rhetoric, I got to say the whole offense defensive distinction is more political rhetoric than battlefield reality. For example, consider a tank parked on a border. Most people would consider a tank an offensive weapon. Certainly, that's the way it was used often in World War II in Europe. But if you're shooting at someone approaching you, is that an offensive or defensive weapon? Is a air-launched munition launched from a F-15 fighter? Most would consider that an offensive weapon. But what if that air-launched munition is shooting a launcher that's about to launch a cruise missile or ballistic missile into a city? I'd call that a defensive act. So the offensive-defensive distinction often in D.C. is employed more in a rhetorical manner than in a clarifying manner. And if you look at the list of weapons that were reported as in this Trump administration suspension that was led at the Pentagon and apparently done without Trump knowing about it, it includes the following. It includes air-to-air missiles, so AIM air missiles, likely AIM-9 Sidewinders, the PAC Patriot interceptors, those are the air defense munitions. So one is an air missile, offensive, most would say. The defensive Patriot interceptor, 155 millimeter artillery rounds, Hellfire missiles, Gimlers, the guided multiple launch rocket system, guided rockets, and Stinger missiles, an air defense. So it's a mixture of offensive and defensive munitions, if one insists on using that distinction. And Ryan and I and our great colleague Cameron McMillan actually dug into the details to scrutinize the assertion coming out of the Pentagon that we had no choice but to suspend these shipments.
Ryan, I come to you for help on the weapon systems, and we'll go back and forth here because Brad just presented an arsenal that is the product of decades of sacrifice and genius by the U.S. munitions manufacturers. However, we seem to have come to a stopping place with production. PAC-3 MSE, intercept aircraft, that's air defense. And I recall reading exactly after 7 of 8 Iskander missiles got through air defense in Ukraine to strike targets in Kyiv that they were out of PAC-3. They were holding back on firing. I learned from you and your reporting with your colleagues that the PAC-3 production capacity for the United States maximum 300 in 2021, 500 in 2024. Ryan, why isn't that 3,000? Why isn't that 5,000? 7 of 8 Iskanders got through. Isn't that warning enough? Good evening to you, Ryan.
I'm on, John. The reason those numbers aren't significantly higher basically comes down to money and time. Industry is only going to have the maximum production capacity at about what the United States and our allies are willing to buy. If they had significantly more than that, they'd be wasting money, which they're not going to do. And unfortunately, even though, as you said, production has roughly doubled, it's still insufficient. And there is more that the Trump administration could be doing on this. In the Army's unfunded priority list, which is essentially things it wants to do if it were given more money, there's $300 million that could be spent on modernizing the PAC-3 line. It's difficult to take seriously the idea that we have to hold these weapons back if we're not even spending as much money as we could on strengthening our production line.
And Brad, a comment on this unfunded mandate. Is that something that we need to know about? Is that a game that's played in Washington that everybody is in on?
I think anyone who cares about American national security, when they're not paying the mortgage and raising the kids, needs to understand this unfunded requirements or unfunded priority list. I'll spare you the 3-hour lecture, but here's the bottom line. This is when the services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, Space Force, or the combatant command, Central Command, Indo-Pacific Command, and all the others say, industry is ready to produce this now or quickly. We want and need it. But the Office of Secretary of Defense, where those combatant command and service requests go for adjudication, or the Office of Management Budget that oversees the overall top line numbers, says, no, sorry, we disagree. And then what goes to Congress is a request that does not include those items. So when I was working in the U.S. Senate for 9 years, that was the first place I went. Hey, Pentagon, Central Command, Indo-Pacific Command says they need this. What the heck's going on? Sometimes there was a good reason for it not to be in there. More often than not, it was because there was an insufficient defense budget request, and they had to cut something that they wanted but couldn't afford within an artificially low top-line budget.
We go to the Sidewinder missile, which is it's almost as old as I am, and it's very effective, and you send your high-performance warplanes up with Sidewinders, and they score kills. That's the nature of the Air Force. However, Ryan, I come to you again. It sounds like I'm complaining, but the contracts from the DOD were for up to $2,500 per year. But I read that the Trump administration requested $603. What explains that for 26? What explains that fallback?
Thanks, Ron. So it's worth noting that production of the Sidewinder has increased from a maximum of 1,200 to about 2,500 now. And the reason that the Trump administration has requested only about 600 is two reasons. One is that part of the production capacity for Sidewinder does go to filling foreign military sales to our allies and partners, some of whom in Europe may actually be giving the Sidewinders to Ukraine. But also, again, we're coming back to this unfunded priority list issue where both Sidewinder and AMRAAM, which is another interceptor missile, are both on the Air Force's unfunded priority list, meaning that the Trump administration and Congress could spend more money on procuring more if they wanted to. As you said, this is a very important interceptor, helps defend particularly against the cruise missiles that Russia is using against Ukrainian cities. It would be a good idea for the Trump administration to step up and request an amount of Sidewinders commensurate with needs rather than an artificial top line budget.
And John, can I just interject on that? Every time you and the listeners hear us say industry's ready, we could buy more, but we're not, because the reason is we're an insufficient budget. Keep in mind the following. The base defense budget request that the Trump administration submitted was the same as the previous fiscal year, not even keeping up for inflation. So if this is the most dangerous moment in our country's history since 1945, what the heck could possibly explain a defense budget that is effectively a decrease that doesn't even keep up with inflation? You can't have a peace through strength Trump policy on a Biden defense budget.
I come back to you, Brad. I read recently that moment when the Southern Front was collapsing for the Russians, this is in the first year of war, and Ukraine was effectively cutting them off from a city they'd crossed the Dnieper River. That was a flip of the coin whether they were going to use a tactical nuke or not. Does the public know that, Brad?
You know, it's a real concern that we should not dismiss, but I suspect, John, you'd also agree that Putin is specializes, as a former KGB colonel, as John McCain used to say, in deceit, duplicity, and manipulation, and also nuclear saber rattling. And we have to be careful to not constrain our support for Ukraine based on fear of what Russia might do. Implicit in your point, if Ukraine is more effective, then we can hopefully bring this conflict to a close sooner and avoid some of these worst case scenarios you're talking about.
I understand. I just, when I read that, that's a recent report. We didn't have it at the time.
Yeah, no, he does it regularly. Yeah.
And what at what point do you give people weapons to fight with? All right, the Stinger missile, that's a manpad, I believe, from the old days, old language. There's 60 per month in 2025. Is that considered adequate, Ryan?
That production level is not considered adequate currently. But what happened, John, is that the production of new Stinger missiles was largely closed for the past 20 years. And because of that, a component in the Seeker went out of production, because if nobody's buying it, the companies are going to shut down. So what happened is that the U.S. Army placed a large order for Stinger missiles. The relevant contractor is currently redesigning that component, and there's going to be large-scale deliveries in 2026. So while the 60 per month is certainly not adequate, that's going to change in the near future. And that additional capacity is what can allow us to continue providing Ukraine with Stinger missiles now, knowing that we're going to be backfilled in the future.
All right, we do have.
And John, once again, industry is ready to produce more Stingers if the Pentagon would simply buy more. They're standing ready to do it. The funding's not there.
The Hellfire missile, we might have enough. I like this number, 170,000. The whole idea of preparing for war is to maintain peace. So you do that with if we had 170,000 of all these weapon systems, nobody's going to think about invading Taiwan. Do you agree, Brad?
I'm all for peace through strength, but peace through strength actually requires strength. And if we don't have enough munitions, our adversaries believe we'll run out of munitions in the first weeks or months of the war, the more likely to initiate aggression and give us wars that could have been avoided.
Yes, history says the Japanese had a first-rate air wings on their carriers. They started the war with the best trained pilots on the planet. It was a shock to Pearl Harbor that they were so good that they destroyed so many ships and flew off. However, they didn't have a backup. So when those pilots went down at the Coral Sea and eventually at Midway, there was no new class coming on. That's how you win wars, not the first line. The first line sacrifices itself. It's the
John, you're so right. That's why a just-in-time Walmart model when it comes to munitions is so insane when it comes to the Department of Defense. You don't just buy the minimum to keep the production line open, which we've even failed to do sometimes. You buy more than you need, understanding that wars usually last longer and more difficult than you expect. And if you wait to start standing up production lines once the shooting starts, it's too late.
Ryan, what's a Gimlers? What does it do?
The Gimlers is the rocket fired by HIMARS or MLRS, and it plays an important role for Ukraine in striking Russian targets behind the front lines up to 70 kilometers. And while Ukraine does have some drones that can fulfill the same role close to the front line, this is one of Ukraine's only means to stop Russia from massing significant forces who could then conduct mass assaults on the front and speed up the rate of gain. Production of Gimlers has increased from about 6,000 when the conflict started to now 14,000 per year. This is a very significant increase, and that increase in production is what allows us to continue supplying Ukraine Gimlers to attrit the Russian military so that it won't threaten NATO in the future.
Brad, your army, 155-millimeter artillery ammunition. Ukraine doesn't have enough. They stand silent while the Russians pound them. Is that what, using the North Korean arsenal, is that how the war is being fought?
You know, John, our colleague John Hardy has highlighted this in his great analysis. We've had points in this conflict in Ukraine where Ukraine was at a 10-to-1 disadvantage in terms of 155 millimeter artillery ammunition, having to ration themselves and not fire because they didn't have enough. some estimates say we've got that about to 2-1 now, which is better, but still not great. This is a little bit of a good news story here. We've gone from 9,000 rounds per month of U.S. production in February 22 to 100,000 per month now by spring of 26. And we also have German companies, Rheinmetall, that is going to be building up to 700,000 rounds annually later this year. So that's all great. But here's the point. If we cut off the supply of Gimlers, you're not going to be able to hit some of those rear areas with massing forces. That's going to result in more forces pushing forward to the line of contact, requiring more 155 millimeter artillery shells. And if we don't give Ukrainians the means to attrit Russian forces, just as Ryan said, it increases the chances we're going to have Americans fighting and dying to do it. That's why giving Ukraine the means of self-defense is not charity, but a wise investment.
Brad Bowman, Ryan Brobst, when we come back, what is to be done?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.